Welcome to the Humans and AI podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor La Orga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together. Great. Hi, Alan. Nice to meet you. Thank you very much for joining to the Humans in AI show. I appreciate that you make time for this, and I'm very excited for what we're going to talk today. Okay, let's start. So, Alan, right now you are the CEO of the Oxford Drug Design, right? So it's an AI drug discovery company that you are focusing particularly in cancer and other major diseases. But yeah, so before starting with all the topic, I would like you to take us back to the origin and to the early influences that you build a career around science, business, and strategies. So what personal or professional insight led you to focus on life science?
So first of all, Flor, thank you for the invitation. I'm delighted to be here, to be speaking with you and your audience. So let's go back. My story is very simple. I'm a chemist. I'm a scientist and have always been a scientist. That was always the plan. And when I started my career as a scientist and went on to my academic first job, I had no intention really of going into business in any way. I meant to always be exclusively in academic science. So when I first got my job at Merck, which was fantastic, it was really to see what chemists did in real life every day. And this was a formidable introduction to how science is translated into good for society, how the industry produces drugs that cure people and alleviate disease. But I didn't know that was going to be so influential for the rest of my career. So after getting my PhD and doing a postdoctoral degree at Oxford, then I had an academic post, and suddenly I was offered the possibility to join a consulting company, which I thought was going to be chemistry consulting, such as experts do this support of various consulting companies that need to solve a technical problem. And little did I know that this was management consultancy in its purest sense. That was from McKinsey and Company. And this was a formidably formative but also challenging experience, because I did not know anything about business at all. But McKinsey has a way of taking people like us and educating us in the way that business works and being able to create value for clients in a business environment. And that then led to, I think, a discovery of the business world in a very positive, enthusiastic way that then resulted in my taking a job doing investments, focused first in the pharma and chemicals and biotech industry. But then I discovered how money is allocated to doing good research and development in pharma and sciences, because I'm a chemist. I've always been a medicinal chemist, developing and using chemistry to develop new drugs and discover new drugs. So that position at Commerzbank Asset Management enabled me to understand how you take money from where it's not being used very efficiently and applying it to companies that are doing the best drug R&D. And with that combined science and business, I was able to meet up with an academic colleague of mine and start CaraQuest, which was my first startup. And as the CEO with that experience at McKinsey and in investment, I was able to take the company as co-founding CEO public in the US relatively quickly, because I understood the other side. And then finally, I become CEO of Oxford Drug Design, applying again my expertise in chemistry as well as business to build up Oxford Drug Design further.
Okay, thanks, Alan. So that's a very interesting story. Like you've really learned the other part of the finance, and then you use it to use for good thing, which is the drug discovery and this thing. Why did you decide to solve the drug discovery problem instead of something else in life science?
I'm a chemist. and chemists make molecules. I decided sometime during my PhD, after I had worked for Merck, it was actually at Merck that I discovered how chemistry is used to discover new drugs to cure disease, as I mentioned. So when I did my PhD at Columbia University in New York, this is an area that I chose, and I worked for one of the most renowned synthetic organic chemists of that generation in order to discover how to make organic molecules are the ones that work in biological systems and that are used to make drugs. So my specialty has always been to put molecules together and within the application, really, if need be, of discovering new drugs. So I've always focused on what I was trained to do and what I enjoy, both at ChiroQuest, which is an area of pharmaceuticals, of the direction of certain molecules, certain substances have directionality. That was ChiroQuest, that's controlled by chemistry. And now in Oxford Drug Design, we use computational methods and pure chemistry to design new molecules against cancer and other diseases. So it was really a result of my being a chemist that I have been focused on the discovery of new drugs.
That's great. I've read that you're using synthetic in the process of your drug discovery. What is the role that synthetic play in your approach?
We have a computational platform that is pioneering, truly pioneering. Why do I say that? Because nowadays there are hundreds of companies doing AI for all sorts of pharmaceutical applications. But the work that we do at Oxford Drug Design is based on the work that was done by one of the pioneers in the field, which was the academic founder of the company, Professor Graham Richards, at the University of Oxford Chemistry Department, who was one of the early practitioners and developers of how to use chemistry, computational chemistry, to discover and design new molecules. Over the past 15 or maybe 20 years since that seminal discovery was done in his labs, we have refined and optimized that platform to make different tools for Oxford Drug Design, including SynthAI, to solve the challenges of designing new drugs that work. So that SynthAI, along with a number of other tools of Oxford Drug Design for a computational platform, goes back to the very fundamental developments of the computational applications to chemistry. And therefore, we have tremendous advantages and tremendous depth when it comes to discovering new drugs. I should mention, Flor, that the success of that pioneering work is the fact that we have advanced so quickly with our own pipeline, with our own therapeutic products, both in cancer and resistant infections. And we've also started to use SynthAI and our other tools to resolve drug discovery challenges of other companies who come to us, biotech and pharma companies who come to us with problems in their drug discovery process, and they would like us to apply our computational platform to solve their challenges. And we've started to do that successfully as well. So both from the theoretical standpoint, as well as from the validation and applications, our platform has been developing very successfully and continues to grow.
Great. As AI is a very powerful tool, right? That it is even smarter than most, I would not say people, but it's very smart. Sometimes makes mistakes, right? So in what ways in SynthAI is smarter than humans, and how do you ensure you can catch it when it makes a mistake?
SynthAI is a computational tool that does a certain number of operations much faster than humans, in a way that brings together many more factors at the same time than a human can do. So from that point of view, it's not that the machine is smarter in terms of intelligence overall, but really what is computational power? Computational power is speed and amount of data processing. What we have done is developed very proprietary, original, creative tools to apply that computational power in ways that produces a result that meets three key objectives simultaneously. When you want to design a new drug, you want this drug to be active. You want it to work. So a lot of companies will tell you, look, we will generate computationally a lot of pictures of molecules that will work. That's not enough. You need this computational platform, not just to generate molecules that could work, because a lot of them you cannot make in the lab. The machine has been generating a lot of stuff, but not all of it can be made. So what we have done is incorporate certain elements of the code, of the algorithm, that not just generates molecules that will work, but also that can be made in the lab using known chemicals. And this use of simultaneous two criteria is something that medicinal chemists can do traditionally, just sitting down like you and me in a room and discussing how we're going to go about it. And that's the way we used to do it at Merck. But the computational power allows you to do a lot of tests and a lot of matching and discarding much quicker and much more powerfully. But that's not enough. SynthAI and our other tools at Oxford Drug Design not only allows this molecule to have the right activity and be made in the lab, but an important challenge is to be able to scale up the molecule once it can be made in small quantities. Because chemists at the research bench, we work in very small amounts. But when you have a drug that's being used for millions of patients, you need large processes. And not all of these small-scale processes can be applied to large scale. So our SynthAI and other platform components also optimize that the process can be scaled up most likely. So you can see, Flor, how our computational platform is oriented towards using this power in very clever, original ways to come up with molecules that can be used straight away to make and to test for new drug potential.
Okay. So do you have any story from a patient that, well, it's like obviously a good one that I know that you have a lot, but that you could share with us that help you to keep moving forward with the mission of Oxford Drug Design?
So we don't work with patients. Our drug is in the preclinical phase. Preclinical phase, the drug, a molecule, goes through various stages of development from the point that is designed until it's approved for human use. It's a very long journey, but it's mainly divided into two parts: preclinical, which is in the lab and in animals, and clinical, which is in humans. Only when it has been approved through both preclinical and clinical does the drug get used in humans. Having said that, what we have seen is results in our preclinical testing that our drug in the oncology program is able to overcome efficacy and safety issues of some of the leading treatments being used today. That you can already see, because the way our drug has been designed, completely novel, is called first in class. It's approaching on cancer from a completely new way. And by approaching oncology from a completely new way with a new target in medicine, the way drugs are discovered is that you have something that had gone wrong in the body, a hormone, a protein, an enzyme, and you have to aim at it as if you were shooting at it, and the bullet is a drug. So it's very important to discover new targets, because that is the novelty of medicine, a new way to treat the disease that is of potential use for a drug. And so we have a new target, a new approach, a new mechanism, and also the new bullet, the new molecule that's going to act on it. So all of this innovation we have done thanks to our computational and obviously to our chemistry understanding. So one important moment has been when we received in vivo results from animal testing that shows both equal, if not better, efficacy. That means that the drug works, and also that has superior safety profile in animals to some of the most well-known drugs in the market. That is very promising.
Okay, I appreciate your clarification. Thank you. How do you see AI changing not how we design drugs, but also who gets access to them and when?
This is a question that unfortunately I don't know much about. Our use of artificial intelligence and machine learning is at the earliest stage of design of a new drug. As computational methods and AI is now being used to solve traffic problems, space, retail, banking in all industries, and even in the pharma industry is being used in ways to treat patient data and clinical outcomes. But our use of AI and machine learning is at the design stage so that the molecules will have the greatest chance of making it through the clinical process. I have to mention, Floor, that the challenge for discovering new drugs has always been the amount of time and the huge amount of money that is necessary to go through both of these phases. So by us at Oxford Drug Design having the platform that can enable us to optimize the initial design, the chances of that drug making it is going to ideally shorten the time and shorten the amount of investment that it will require later on.
Okay. So that you already answered a question that I wanted to ask now, but it was about what was the biggest challenge in getting, for example, investors, clinicians, regulators to trust and adopt AI in the drug development process. So I guess that you already said the capital is one of the most difficult, challenging thing, right?
The most difficult challenge in medicine is to design a drug which is effective and which is safe, because patients is what really matters, and their physicians. And that has always been the key challenge, that a drug needs to work, but it cannot be toxic, that it's worse than the actual disease. And we have achieved that significantly in oncology. Nowadays, you have almost every day new developments in the fight against cancer, but there is still a great deal of work to be done. There is still a lot of drugs which work a little bit, but cause a number of side effects, or that they work a great deal, but the side effects are very severe, or vice versa. That has been the challenge. Now, the investment that is required has always been part and parcel of the pharma industry. This is why new drugs are expensive, because the amount of research and development involves thousands of patients to make sure the drug works, that it doesn't cause side effects. If it does, in how many? This is a very laborious process, so that the regulators, when they get all this data, they can approve a drug for mass consumption, which is better than the existing ones and which is safer than the existing ones. So in the meantime, we are at Oxford Drug Design, we're raising capital because we need to grow, and we are very successful in our pipeline programs in oncology, but we need capital to continue this and reach the clinic for it to be tested in humans. So investors, they look for opportunities like ours because we have what is called, again, first-in-class, novel targets, a new way to treat the disease, and hopefully that is a more efficient way to get to a commercial drug.
So You've got, as you say in the beginning, a little bit of your journey and you changed, you've done a lot of different things in your career, right? You were from a consultant in McKinsey and then managing a super big portfolio. So how have you personally navigated uncertainty and risk, especially in this field of AI in life sciences?
Yes. Look, somewhat late in my career, I discovered a very apt, very appropriate term, which is that one should aim for a stretch challenge. That means going to something where you feel a bit uncomfortable, that you're being stretched beyond your actual abilities. So when I was I've been an academic chemist and I was in my academic position in a university, and I was offered a job at McKinsey to do management consultancy, that was definitely a stretch assignment because I knew nothing about business, but obviously my colleagues at McKinsey thought that I had the potential to start thinking like a business person. And therefore, at each stage, when I left McKinsey and I was going into the investment side, I didn't know how capital markets worked. I didn't know how money moved from one company to the other that well. And again, I applied the same type of mindset, which is, look, this is a stretch for me, but I want to learn and I'm going to try it. And then someone who tries hard and works hard at it, then can reach the next level. And this is how over my career, whenever I have encountered the possibility to have a stretch assignment and do something that complements the rest of my career, I've always taken it. This is also how I've become an academic again at the University of Oxford and having a Royal Society appointment as an entrepreneur in residence at the University of Oxford. I wasn't sure. I've been doing a lot of teaching early in my career, but to teach 100 PhDs at Oxford is quite challenging. But it's also very satisfying. And now the course has become a very successful one in training scientists like me as entrepreneurs. My guiding light has always been, you have to be a bit courageous and go for stretch assignments that are interesting at good quality places. And that has been a very satisfying and exciting, but also very challenging series of steps. But I've enjoyed the challenges.
Yeah, so I guess that also those are the lessons that you share with your young scientists today at Oxford.
That is exactly why the course has been enormously successful. It has received effusive testimonials and top rating at the University of Oxford, which is already a challenging place to teach. There is very high quality academic work being done there. And what the course brings is not just technical understanding of entrepreneurship, which we scientists do not have, and therefore we need, in spite of us thinking that because we know science and complicated mathematics and physics, that we can deal with the business side. But we also need to be exposed to the mindset of the challenge that being in entrepreneurship is really quite different. So I keep sharing with my students the huge number of mistakes and lessons learned that I've made along the way. And they really identify, because scientists are a bit narrow-minded. We are very narrow-minded. And whenever we hear this from a business person, then we say, oh, that's the business type. But if it's a scientist, a bird of a feather like them, then it gets under their skin. They say, that's the way it really is.
So you've got both, like you have the business side and then the scientist side. So it's actually a very interesting combination. As AI takes on more responsibility in designing potential therapies and all, basically everything, not just in life science and life sciences, where do you believe the human touch remains there, like, or should be, will, but what is your thought about that?
People are constantly asking me and others in the field that same question. And you read in the press very often, how long will it be before machines replace humans for various things? We at Oxford Drug Design are at the forefront of applying machine learning and AI to drug discovery. We are. And we've proven that internally and externally, and also in the scientific literature. And one thing is clear, that without the expertise of the domain scientists, namely the chemists, the biologists, the physicians, the biochemists, it will not work to have a machine solve as complex a problem as it is to design a drug that is optimized. So the way we work at Oxford Drug Design is that we have a team of chemists and biochemists, computational scientists that have our human expertise, and then we have very powerful computational components. So the computational components are fed certain amount of information in databases. The results come to us as humans. We take advantage of the amount of processing that has been done, as I explained previously, by AI and machine learning. And then we make certain decisions. Then we send those molecules to be made by a lab. Those molecules then get tested in another lab on animals or whatever. And then the results come. Then we as humans analyze and feed the computational hardware again with the results, so that it's an iteration between the computational side and the domain scientists, so that the result is optimized. But at least in our field of drug discovery, we do not envision that the machine can solve the problem on its own. It could be done for other areas of AI application, but not in this one.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay. Looking ahead, what kind of biotech ecosystem do you hope to see in 10 years? Or if it's not 10 years, 5 years, to make it easier.
Ecosystem in terms of?
Basically, in your field, what do you hope to see that binds how do you envision like the other innovation that's happening?
Look, that's a very broad question. And the only thing any responsible scientist can say is that the pace of medical, chemical, computational, chemical discovery is accelerating. We know in 1 week what we discover in 1 week, what used to take a month, for example, some years ago, and it goes exponentially. Why? Because to the extent that biology and chemistry have been deepening our understanding of how things work, plus the computational power has exploded, of course, then these two things combined, at least in our area of medicine, have resulted in an accelerated pace of discovery and success, I would say. Exactly what that means in practice is really not easy to predict. We cannot say if we continue at this pace, a drug will take from soup to nuts, instead of X years, it will take Y years. We cannot say that. But one thing is sure, that when we look back the last 5, 10, even 12 months, then the acceleration in both the main science as well as the computational field continues to develop at an accelerated pace. So it's very exciting time and will continue to get more exciting.
And so what kind of values do you think are important for that evolution, innovation that you're expecting, we just talked about?
It's essential to not lose the perspective that the human scientists will continue to play the critical role, and that the computational side will play an increasingly valuable role, and it will save a great deal of processing time and information gathering. But the value for us as a computationally driven company that also has a very experienced human team is that medicine will continue to advance to the extent that the AI and machine learning power continues to be integrated with the advances in human understanding of the science behind it.
Okay. So, Alan, we are almost at the end of the interview. It seemed very exciting interview for me, at least. So, I would like you to ask, but this is more like open question. It's more like if you've got, there's something that obviously we didn't have the time to touch every single aspect of Oxford design, Oxford drug design. So, would you like to share any advice to the young scientists or the young people who wants to as well doing a drug discovery or, yeah?
I have, in a way, shared that already, and I share this with my students, and I've applied it in my own career, is that one should aim high. Whenever one is, wherever one is in one's career, to keep on pushing to have a challenge, to work for better institutions, to seek to do more sophisticated and challenging work in a way that is going to be more productive. And to not be afraid, dear me, that's a bit too much for me. That's not something I'll be able to do. I think we scientists have a great deal of potential to overcome these challenges because we are used to being constant on their uncertainty. We don't know what the result of an experiment is going to be. But in spite of that, we stay in the lab and we stay in every day. So this perseverance is something that we scientists in our early stages of our career should continuously apply. That is, there is uncertainty, but we scientists can deal with uncertainty. We know how to produce a hypothesis. If the outcome is A, then I'll take route A. If the outcome is B, then I'll decide what happens. So I encourage all of the scientists, particularly in early, medium, or advanced stages of their career, to be confident and to relish the challenges of growth in one's impact.
That was strong, Alan. Thank you very much. So yeah, the scientists, I always have the idea of the facts, because the facts is like, that's as you said, if this is the result, you have to go that way. Yeah, so that's very interesting. Okay, Alan, so thank you very much for this conversation. I've learned a lot about drug discovery today, but actually, so I appreciate the time here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Flor, for your excellent questions. Thank you for your time and again for having me in your program.
Thanks for listening to the Humans and AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.